This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.
Instagram unveils new safety rules the day before a company exec testifies before Congress. Plus, Elon Musk takes aim at a bill meant to get more people driving electric vehicles. And Presidents Biden and Putin will talk today as the U.S. warns Russia is preparing an assault on Ukraine.
We talk about a Cold War. This would be a hard freeze. The battle lines will basically be drawn.
It is Tuesday, December 7th. I'm Peter Granitz with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Instagram is introducing a series of new safety features, which the company says will give parents more control over how much time their children spend on the app. Adam Mosseri, the head of Instagram, detailed the measures in a blog post. And they come the day before he's set to testify before a Senate panel on how dangerous Instagram is to children. A journal investigation shows that internal company research found the app is harmful to many young users. Its parent company, Meta, disputes that characterization of the findings. Among the changes unveiled is one that will prompt users to take a break after spending a determined amount of time on it. Elon Musk has taken aim at President Biden's $2 trillion social spending bill. In a wide-ranging interview with the Journal, the Tesla CEO criticized federal efforts to spur the purchase of electric vehicles.
Honestly, it might be better if the bill doesn't pass. The federal budget deficit is insane. So I don't know if we should be adding to that loss. That seems pretty crazy. Something's got to give. You can't just spend $3 trillion more than you earn every year and don't expect something bad to happen. I think, you know, this is not good.
The bill has passed the House, but the Senate has yet to vote on the measure. The world's largest maker of smartphones, TVs, and semiconductors has reshuffled its leadership. Samsung is replacing its three co-CEOs with just two new ones and merging its consumer and mobile electronics units. The company is prioritizing chip making after the components division accounted for the vast majority of Samsung's operating profit in the most recent quarter. And Representative Devin Nunes is leaving Congress a year before his term is up. He's the top Republican on the House Intelligence Committee and will become the CEO of former President Trump's new social media venture. The company is planning to merge with the special purpose acquisition company Digital World. But yesterday, a regulatory filing revealed that the Securities and Exchange Commission is investigating the planned deal. China Evergrande's massive restructuring is finally underway. The Chinese property developer confirmed it's working with offshore creditors after the stock closed at a 10-year low yesterday. At the same time, Chinese authorities have stepped up their involvement in the company's affairs. Markets reporter Anna Hertenstein is with us for more. Welcome back.
Hey, good to be here.
Good to have you. So tell us about this restructuring. What's the goal?
Evergrande is very indebted. They have total debts of around $89 billion. Broader liabilities around $300 billion. So that includes things like the debt, but also pre-sold apartments that aren't yet built. Most of its debt is onshore, but it has about $20 billion in offshore bonds. So it's been missing interest payments, raising questions about the financial health of these big Chinese real estate developers. And so far it's avoided default. But as you said, it has very newly begun a restructuring process, and that would be about working with its bondholders and trying to pay as many back as possible, and also hopefully reorganizing the company in a way to operate in a more financially healthy way.
Do we know what's happened in its restructuring yet?
So we're hearing that it's still very early stages. They've had conversations with offshore creditors, but it hasn't necessarily begun a formal restructuring process yet.
The company is heavily indebted, but it has thus far avoided defaulting on its dollar bonds on many occasions by making late interest payments. Can it continue to find the cash to make the future payments?
So it has been selling off assets to try to raise that cash. Stuff like stakes in other businesses. It recently sold a stake in a company called Hang Ten, which is a film and TV producer. But the company did recently warn that it may not have the cash to pay.
Can China Evergrande emerge from this?
There have been examples of companies surviving restructurings in the past. The question is still whether the Chinese government will need to step in to help them build all these apartments that they sold and keep the property market stable.
And what have Chinese authorities said about the restructuring? And what does it mean for the broader Chinese property sector?
So it does seem like it's a bit of a turning point. We heard from the government of Evergrande's home province recently, who said that they would dispatch a working group to work with Evergrande on risk management. The central bank and a few other Chinese regulators also issued statements about Evergrande, where they said that they would work to help keep the broader property market stable. So we're finally getting some answers on this. This has been a key question throughout the process. How involved would the government get? Would they bail out Evergrande? Would they let them fail? So we're finally getting some signals about how this could play out.
That is markets reporter Anna Hertenstein. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much.
And coming up, can a video conference stop an invasion? Presidents Biden and Putin are set to talk today as Russia masses thousands of troops on its border with Ukraine.
NetSuite by Oracle brings accounting, finance, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce costs everywhere. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/wallstreet.
U.S. President Joe Biden is expected to talk with Russian leader Vladimir Putin today, and it comes as the U.S. is accusing Russia of preparing to invade Ukraine. Here's CIA Director William Burns speaking to the Journal Monday.
I would never underestimate President Putin's risk appetite on Ukraine.
To learn more about what to expect, we are joined by Ann Simmons. She's our Moscow bureau chief. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
What is the situation at the Russian border with Ukraine right now?
Well, the situation at the border is really tense. Russia has been amassing thousands of troops at its border with Ukraine in recent weeks. And it's not only making the government in Kiev, but also the US and NATO partners extremely nervous. The government in Kiev is certainly on high alert. And we should note, though, that Ukraine has also staged military combat drills near its border with Belarus, which is a strong ally of Russia and also Russia's neighbour. So there's been increased activity militarily on both sides. There's been a lot of trading of warnings. Moscow has said that this is basically anti-Russian hysteria that the West is whipping up, and the West is trying to kind of foment tension and destabilize the region. The Kremlin has argued that Russia isn't posing a threat to anyone. It's moving troops within its own borders, which it has every right to do. That's what the Kremlin is arguing. So Moscow also says that, you know, the West is providing Ukraine with sophisticated weaponry, and that's right on Russia's doorstep.
We should say that Russia has amassed its troops on this border before without invading. Why are the fears so concrete now?
Russia really does feel that there has been this closer relationship in the last several months between the US and Ukraine, with the new presidency, or the now year-old presidency of Mr. Biden. Ukraine wants to integrate with the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, and with Europe. But President Putin has made it clear that Ukraine joining NATO, that would be a Russian red line. And in recent months, this last year, Moscow has seen Ukraine kind of cozying up to the West. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky even visited the White House this spring. And so Russia wants to send a warning to the West, to NATO, that basically says, back off, you're encroaching on our territory.
Do you have any idea what Presidents Putin and Biden want to accomplish from this call? Is it to tone things down?
The Kremlin has made pretty clear that there shouldn't be any great expectations from this meeting. What it does allow is it allows both sides to have their say. For example, you know, Mr. Biden, as we've reported, is expected to underscore that the US is concerned about Russia's military activities on the border with Ukraine, and Washington is basically going to affirm its support for the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine. The Russians, on the other hand, and Mr. Putin, he's going to demand, and he has already, legally binding security guarantees that NATO won't expand any further east, because that would be encroaching on Russia's territory. Russia also doesn't want NATO to place any weapons close to Russia's territory. Whether or not Washington is likely to agree to such a demand is unclear, but this talk could also help diffuse tensions. It could be a chance for each side to talk each other down or try to gain some kind of consensus.
And it has been 7 years since Russia annexed the Crimean Peninsula of Ukraine. And now Vladimir Putin is sending these signals that he is going to potentially invade the country. What is it about Ukraine? Why is Ukraine so important to him?
Ukraine for Russia is part of Russia. It's part of the brotherhood, if you wish, the Slavic brotherhood. Russia and Ukraine share cultural and some linguistic and traditional ties. And when Russia annexed the Crimean Peninsula in 2014, it was very clear then, even among ordinary Russians, that this was celebrated. President Putin said he regards Crimea as being an inseparable part of Russia. Because, you know, until 1954, the peninsula had been under Moscow's control since 1783, when the Russian Empire actually annexed it from the Ottoman Empire. So Crimea, part of Ukraine, but now part of Russia, has always had this strong tie to Russia.
And I have to ask, if President Putin were to send his forces into Ukraine, what might happen, you know, diplomatically, militarily, economically? How could this play out?
It's difficult to say, Peter, because Russia has done this before. In 2014, Russia annexed the Crimean Peninsula in Ukraine. Sanctions were imposed on Russia, but today we're in 2021, and Russia still controls Crimea. So although there were sanctions, it did not have an impact in terms of Russia relinquishing control of Crimea. This would be not good, obviously, for the region geopolitically. We talk about a Cold War. This would be a hard freeze. The battle lines will basically be drawn. There will likely be no turning back in terms of improving relations between Russia and the West. It's unclear whether the West, whether NATO would intervene on the part to defend Ukraine, because Ukraine is not a member of NATO, it's just a partner. So we are at a very difficult crossroads, if you wish, and these talks are going to be critical between President Biden and President Putin to see whether or not they can indeed try to ease tensions and try to come to some kind of compromise.
We will talk again. Ian Simmons, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
She is our Moscow bureau chief. And finally, millions of kids in the U.S. are eligible for COVID shots. Good news, especially for the parents, those same parents who undoubtedly have had to try and convince their kids that previous shots wouldn't be so bad. But reporter Jimmy Vielkind says pharmacists are going out of the way to entertain kids at vaccine clinics, and maybe that could encourage even more vaccinations.
One pharmacist who I spoke with said that he dresses up in a superhero cape. He has jugglers, he has storytellers, and so going to the vaccine clinic and doing that 15-minute waiting period can actually be an experience for kids. He said that he's also a wedding planner, and he took the same skills that he would apply to planning someone's wedding and put it into planning a vaccine clinic. The idea, he said, was to make it fun for kids so that they are eager to come back and get their second dose, and so that they'll go to school, they'll talk to their friends, talk about how this was actually a fun experience, and just encourage more vaccination.
And that's what's news for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Granitz of the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.